Hey, everybody. I need someone to write down who's checking in tonight. If someone could do that for me, I would greatly appreciate it. Because I am driving. I can keep what we have on tap in my head, but making sure I have all the check-ins is probably going to be a little tricky. But good evening, everyone. I was just having a nice meeting for the Ramapo Rally, getting organized for that. Hopefully, if you're available for all or part of that day, on August 13th, you'll be able to participate. But let's start with the net this evening. This is the Bergen Amateur Radio Association Technical Net. This net is conducted at 9 p.m. each Thursday night on a frequency of 146.955, the repeater of the Chestnut Ridge Radio Club, which uses a minus 600 offset for transmit, and a PL of 141.3. Is there any emergency or prairie traffic at this time? Please call K2BAR. Okay, nothing heard. The purpose of this net is to have a conversation. Conversation about things technical, specifically amateur radio, any topic of amateur radio. Amateur radio is inherently technical, so it doesn't have to be a lofty question, but something about amateur radio, electronics, electricity, computers, telecommunications, things we do with these things, and how communications or these other things influence them, or how they operate, how they, you know, where they're going to go and where they've been. Whatever pleases you. We hope that you'll join the conversation. The other thing is, even if you don't have anything to contribute, we'd like you to check in. Because when you check in, we can perhaps consult with you as a resource. We might want to know your opinion about something. So don't be shy. Don't be embarrassed. We may call on you. So just because you don't have anything specific to contribute doesn't mean you should check in. So let's talk about how we check in. We check in with our call sign, our name, and then we indicate whether we have a question, a comment, which could be something you've observed or have a previous thought on from past nets or whatever. It doesn't matter. It could be anything. Or you have a question, comment, both, or none of the above. As I said, even if you don't have anything to contribute, check in. Love to hear from you. So start with your call sign, your name. We do it in an orderly manner, and we're going to start with tonight the November group, since November is well represented. So who is our first November station? Please call K2BAR. Noelle, are you our first November station?
Yes, I was being polite and waiting for somebody. Three questions. TechNet, into a young.
Okie dokie, Noelle with three questions. Very good. Any other November stations? Let's do the Kilo 2s. Every station has call sign begins with Kilo, followed immediately by the number 2.
This is K2AMI. No questions. Maybe a comment, but that's about all.
Good evening, Tony. We'll catch your comment early. Very good. Good evening. Any other Kilo 2s? How about other Kilos? Like, start with Ben. Ben, check in, please.
KF2ID, Ben, but I'm going to be leaving fairly shortly. I'll just hang out for a short while.
And thank you for dropping in. Any other Kilos? Any call sign with a Kilo. That's a start. Wow. Things are light tonight. How about Whiskeys? Any Whiskey stations?
W2JEK, Don, none of the above.
Hey, Don. By the way, N2SU asked me if he could run a test session during the Ham Fest on the 13th. I said the bike ride is the 13th. The bike ride is the 14th. The Ham Fest is the 13th in Bergenfield. So let me know later or offline if you would like to participate and not have to do the administration. You're more than welcome. We're going to run like one test section like at 9 o'clock, I think, just to make it easy, let people enjoy the ham fest before and after taking a test in one shot. But anyway, we'll talk more about that later. Any other whiskeys?
This is Whiskey 2 Juliet, Charlie, Jim, and I'm trying to keep a list for you, however.
You're a friend. Thank you, sir. Thank you, James. All right, no questions, no comments from you tonight?
I have a comment, however.
Okay, we'll get your comment after Noel's questions and Tony's comment, I think. Any other check-ins, please call KKBAR.
WDH, Ray, none of the above.
Ray, your call sign again, please.
The Whiskey 2 Charlie Hotel.
Thank you very much. Appreciate it. Who is the station who doubled with you?
AA209, never called on the A's.
Right, I did not. But I was kind of assuming that I didn't have any more W's. Ha! I was wrong. I figured the A's would have it. Anyway, Nico, questions, comments, confusions, what's your pleasure?
None of the above, and I'm mobile, so I may have to skip. But I'll be mobile for a while. AA209, back to K2BAR.
Kids, and you're running around? Just kidding. All right, very good, Nico. Thank you. Any other stations for the net, please call K2BAR. Well, let's get to it. Tony, your announcement or comment first.
Okay, just wanted to give a rundown of the up-and-coming things for the month of August. The weekend of the 6th and 7th is the VHF, the very high-frequency contest, run by the ARL, and that's from 200 megahertz up. We generally run 220 and 432 bands in our VHF contest, but this is the UHF contest. Did I say that right the first time? UHF contest. So that's the great weekend of the 6th and the 7th. And the following week is Gordon's Ham Fest. I call it Gordon's, but obviously it's the Boy Scout troop called Venture Crew 7373. That's on Saturday, August the 13th. Details to follow if you need them. And then after August the 13th, the following weekend, is the Ham Fest at a new location. Usually was called the Oakland Ham Fest, but it's now called the Ramapo Mountain Amateur Radio Club Ham Fest. And it's held in Camp Veritans, up in Haledon. So that's the Saturday, August the 20th. Just wanted to make the point of those three up-and-coming events. That's all, Gordon. Back to them.
So those in reverse order. So, on the 20th is the Ham Fest that Ramapo Mountain's running. Camp Veritans is located in the shadow of William Patterson University. If you get a map of William Patterson University, it's by Gate 1. The entrance to Camp Veritans is literally integrated with the opening in the off of Haledon Avenue, I guess it is, from Gate 1. It's that simple. They will have some indoor capabilities. I'm sure they'll run a you-buy-it kitchen. They always have before. They'll also have tailgating outside. I spoke with John on Monday and got all the scoop on that. I'm probably going to go to that as well. The other Ham Fest is run by Venture Crew 7373 and Boy Scout Troop 139 in Bergenfield. And it's, let me drop it. It is on North Williams Street in Bergenfield. It's right up Teaneck Road from Route 4. So it's 10 minutes from the bridge and 10 minutes from the parkway, basically, or 17 for that matter. It is flat access. You are 22 feet from your car edge to the selling floor with no stairs. It's air conditioned, it'll be rain or shine, and the where you unload your gear is covered should it be raining or oppressively warm. There's plenty of parking in adjacent lots, but all the selling is done indoors, and I can send a flyer out, or maybe Tony, I can send you a flyer and you can shuffle it out to people as well. That'd be great. But if you email me w2ttt@att.net, we'll send you one, a flyer directly. Admission is $5, and you get a pancake and sausage breakfast for your trouble. And all vendors get a free breakfast with their table set. So that's also been provided. Having said that, the UHF contest is one of my favorites, and boy, as long as I'm a scout leader and responsible for a troop, it's really tough for me to do because it's the day I come home from a week of scout camp. And one year I got to find a way to send all the gear home and stay where I am and operate the UHF contest from FN21. It's actually have a good spot right in my campsite, and I could do that without a problem. But not this year, maybe next. I have a 1,450-foot mountain that I could be very happy to sit on and operate. It would be great. Anyway, any other questions or comments about any of these events that Tony brought up, please call K2BAR. Hey, Tony, you have any more?
Questions, no comments further.
Very good. So let's at this time turn to our good friend Mr. Noel for his trinity of questions. Let's try them one at a time. Just take them one at a time, Noel, just so we can all digest them mentally. And 2AL, K2BAR.
Okay. I apologize for not being volunteering to write down, but my wrist was rebuilt, and I got a bandage and a splint from the knuckle of my right hand halfway up the forearm, halfway to the elbow. Last Friday, after I got home from the hospital in the afternoon, Tony and his son Michael came over to help me in the house. It was sort of like two tugs steering the boat into New York Harbor.
Yeah, I'm sure it was. You mean there's no truth to the rumor that Elizabeth used a rolling pin and smashed your wrist in a fit of anger after you were being stupid again?
Nah, but I got some really good drugs, so I'm pretty much stupid most of the time. Okay, first one. Antenna. Assuming that I have a half-wave dipole, and that's what my reference is, and I have another antenna that's a Yagi, and it claims that it's supposed, let's say it really has 20 dB gain off of that halfway dipole. I've had a discussion with somebody about how much farther away from the single source you can be to have the same single strength. And that is my argument. Because we're subject to the cube square law, I'm thinking 4 or 5 times greater range. You can probably, if your original range, just to pick a number, is 10 miles, I don't think, in order to, and you're on a flat ground and everything else is the same, you're not anything out of the ordinary, I'm saying if you're 40 or 50 miles away, you could have the same single strength because of the cube square law. What do you think about that, N2OEL?
First thing I think is that you're talking about the inverse square law, right?
Actually, what I'm saying is radio waves expand in a sphere, so that every time you double the distance, you get the cube root is strong. So it's the cube square law. So if I'm saying that if you go 10 miles farther, it's going to be 1/100 of the single strength, approximately. But that's what my question is to the net.
Okay, so let's calibrate the phraseology, the terminology, and the mathematics here. So first things first, it's called the inverse square law, not the inverse cube law. Let's start there. So what you are saying is something along the lines of what we were trying to say, but the math was just a little jiggered. So if you double the distance, you have a quarter of the power density. If you triple the distance, you will have one-ninth the power density. Think of it as a cross-sectional slice where that energy has to be dispersed across an ever-expanding cone or however, let's say you call it a cone. And so the cross-sectional area will be the square of the distance, or in this case, the power density will be 1 over the square of the distance. So twice as far is a quarter. 3 times as far is a ninth. 4 times as far is a sixteenth. And so on. So if you think of it as power density, and dB gain is a power density kind of measurement, then you can figure out that at about 16, or 4 times the distance, you will have about 1/16 the power. 1/16 the power is roughly, 15 dB, 16 dB, a tenth the power is 10 dB, a 20th the power is 13, so about 12 dB. 12 dB will be, in other words, 4 times the distance will be about 12 dB down. So to go to 20 dB, you need 8 more dB, so you can figure it out just by keep going. So 1 in 25 is probably close to about 1 in 25, or should we say 5 times to 6 times the distance.
I think that would be true if it was the flat Earth. And, however, the picture I remember in my mind showed a vertical antenna, and it showed a hemisphere, and it said that if you double the distance, you have the cube root, you have, if you go from 2 to 4, instead of having 1/4 the power, you have 1/8 the power. And that's what I was thinking. So anyways, under your thoughts, how much more distance would I get if I had 10 miles range with a dipole at X single strength, and now I have a 20 dB yagging? How many miles can I go to get and still have the same single strength?
Okay, so if you have a unity gain antenna, what's your distance?
Let's just take 10 miles. It doesn't matter.
10 miles. So we've established it's 1/16 the power is approximately 12 dB. So 1/32, which would be half that, would be 15 dB. 18 dB would be 1/64. Not quite 1/128, so why don't we call it 100? So why don't we call it 100 miles?
Okay. Next thing. Did you know that there are available at some really cheap prices relatively powerful LEDs and a whole group of hobbyists that enjoy playing with them? I couldn't resist. I mean, it was like, it was $8, $9 for the LED, and about $6 for the driver, free shipping. Anyways, the darn thing is rated at approximately 10 watts, and on the various blogs that are attached to this website where I bought it, it comes on an aluminum plate. It draws 2.8 amps at 3.8 volts, and the regulator is a switching regulator, so you can put up to 8.4 volts in, and basically it converts it to the exact voltage and current needed for this particular LED. And of course, if you have double the voltage, you will draw approximately half the current because of the way the setup is. One of the things I think I'm going to have to do is put a fan on the LED for forced air cooling. And I was just talking to KF2ID about that. The idea was hilarious. Also, the warning that I read was, don't touch it with your bare skin because it'll cause deterioration of the bubble that's around the LED. Sort of like the old halogen lamps. You can touch one of those with bare skin and put it in, it burns out in an hour or two.
Oh, that makes sense. I understand, because that energy is going to bounce off of the oils and the deposits of dirt and such that you're leaving on the outside, which will create increased thermal retention and reduced light. In the process, it will heat up the device and shorten its life.
And the last thing is a little bit weird. I was on the BasicNet last night. The first thing I did, of course, was test out my, make sure I was on 7.9 repeater by talking to Bill W2JKY. Everything was fine. And I'm listening to people check in. So I checked in after D. MP2F checked in. And I didn't hear that control. And it was driving me crazy. I mean, because occasionally every minute or two, I'd hear somebody say something to that control, nice and strong on the repeater. What I finally discovered after about 15 minutes and turning down my squelch is I'm getting the 7.9 repeater in Paramus full blast, and I'm barely picking up the Franklin Lakes repeater. It's, I guess, 2. And I don't think I haven't changed anything here. And I still have that 18-foot DB9 on the roof. And I'm wondering if anybody else has any noticed any single strength variation, or should I start looking at my wires and stuff, or maybe my radio, because it's a big difference.
Hey, J4WD.
Hey, Rachel. Good evening.
K2BAR, AJ4WD. Good evening. To answer Noel's question, I am using the Franklin Lakes repeater on a regular basis because I get coverage up in Mahwah, and I don't get coverage until I'm almost in Allendale or, you know, the entering of Ramsey on 17. And so I've not seen any issue with regard to the output of the repeater or a difference between Paramus or Franklin Lake.
Okay. I know where Noel lives, and I know the terrain around his house, and he may or may not have an issue in his station. But I can assure you, Noel, that you are well shielded from Franklin Lakes compared to, let's say, Paramus. You're down in that hollow with a ridge rising to your west. You know, Franklin Lakes and you're south in Maywood. I think you're shadowed by the mountain through Wyckoff, places like that. I think Wyckoff is in the way. I think that little bump in Maywood is in the way, and all the way up to Rochelle Avenue and stuff. Or that, I think it's Rochelle Avenue to your west. I'm trying to remember now. But you get the idea.
I'm pretty sure I was working Franklin Lakes with 5 watts before. I have that 18-foot long DB9 on the roof, on the chimney. And, of course, it's got supposedly 9.6 dB gain on 2 meters. So if I put 5 watts in here, I'm getting 40 watts out at the antenna, minus the losses in the 75-foot of LMR-400, which is not an awful lot, so maybe I'm getting 30 watts out. And the same should be true at receipt. And to my memory, I was at perfect reception of Franklin Lake. In fact, I'm pretty sure I worked it with my attic J-pole. It's in the attic, my backup antenna. I'm pretty sure I worked both of them. In fact, I think I'm pretty sure I ran the Baronet a couple times using Franklin Lake's J-pole antenna in the attic at 55 watts, but J-pole antenna is nothing compared to this humongous antenna on the roof. So I got to start looking at my lead, the feed line and other stuff. Maybe with the radio. Who knows, but as I said, it's S2 compared to the Paramus repeater, which I can work with a tenth of a watt. 2 OEM.
Anybody have any thoughts on this? I mean, if Paramus is that strong, I'm having a little trouble figuring that it's his station. I mean, it could be, but boy, it strikes me as though that it's more terrain than anything. And maybe that it's summer and the foliage is in full bore now. Maybe that's it too. Anybody else have any thoughts?
V2JC.
Hey, Jim.
If he puts the J-pole back on again, does he still have the same problem?
Actually, the J-pole's still up there, except it's now a horizontal antenna with the base pointing at the repeater. What happened is my friends helped me by putting up the 6-meter delta loop beam. And in the process, somewhere along the way, the J-pole got dislodged from the hook that was on the ceiling and is laying on the floor of the basement. And I can barely pick up the 7-9 repeater. I can barely tell somebody's there. I will not know until I cannot get up to the attic. For to get up to the attic, you have to crawl up through this little hole. And with one hand not working so well, and besides which, it's probably dangerous for me to climb up into the attic, I'm going to wait till my friend comes back on the weekend and then put the J-pole back up. So then I'll do my test then. But I couldn't do it now. And 2 OEM.
Oh, yeah, that's a good lesson. I kind of figured something like that had happened to you. Alrighty. Anybody else have any comments for Noel on this subject?
AJ4WD.
Joel, go right ahead.
The receive shouldn't make a whole lot of difference. Your losses are, of course, when you're putting power through everything. So if you're having an issue with any of your feed lines, and I guess a good question is the feed line a harmonic or a multiple of the band? You know, you may have an issue there where, you know, something's happening with your signal being inverted or dissipated with regard to the feed point on the antenna.
You missed kind of multiple of a quarter wavelength, is that what you're saying?
Yeah, you know what. You got to think about how that wave is traveling. Is the wave hitting that feed point out of phase, or you know, is it in phase, or is it being chopped?
Same frequency, it shouldn't matter.
Well, unless there's an impedance mismatch. So what you could do is you could take a line analyzer and look at the characteristic impedance of the coax with the antenna as its termination. And if everything is up to snuff, there is the impedance. It's not just 50 ohms, but, you know, not too much capacitive or inductive reactance, then you should be okay. I mean, there's ways to get 50 ohm impedance, have a 1-to-1 SWR and have either too much capacitor or inductive reactance, and the other one is compensating for it in the extreme, and therefore you could have some issues, but I'm just not thinking that's happening. I mean, I'm thinking that it's topography, purely topography, and the advent of foliage.
Would my radio fall back?
If you had an SWR issue, yes, but and that's another thing. Good point. But if you have your low, if you have a low SWR, again coming back to topography because topography complemented by foliage. Anybody else?
I would second the foliage bit, WPJC.
November, this whole problem goes away, right? No. Do you know of anybody who's got an antenna analyzer who is close at hand?
I mean, besides the one that's approximately 4 feet from my left hip?
All right, so unscrew the radio and check the SWR, but also take note of the capacitive inductive reactants.
By the way, since you gave it a name, I just looked up the inverse square law by Googling it. So, yes, I'll do that tomorrow, not now, because, by the way, this repeater comes in perfect, and when I was listening to people on the net by, you know, various stations transmitting last night on the Marinette, I could pick up almost everybody on the input. So that's why I was wondering if it was the repeater, because it just seems strange. I'll do it. I'll take it out tomorrow after coffee.
I'm going to make it to coffee tomorrow, we'll see. But, I have to go look at my work computer, which I have at 4 o'clock or 3:30, so I suspect things will have been placed on my calendar because everybody knows I'm going away for the next 2 weeks, one way or the other. I'm going away for scout camp for a week, and speaking of which, I need a volunteer to run the net next week. The week after, I'll be back, but I'm taking a class during the day. I'm taking the IS 300 and 400 class over Passaic County. And if folks, I should be able to run the net the second week of August. That won't be a problem. Anyway, what else do we have on this topic?
Good JK.
Time to go right ahead.
Yeah, one of the things I think is causing some of the confusion is the fact that you have two repeaters at the same frequency with different PL tones. Some people are using one, some people are using the other. You're not waiting for the one to drop before they use the other one. And I think there's some problems with the one of the parameters also. I'm not sure exactly what that is. But that's why used to be you either had one or you had the other. They shut down parameters for the Racy's net, and then they put it back up again. That was on the Wednesday nights. But then they always had the Franklin Lake covering. But now they have the couple both on the air, different PL tones. And, some people, I'm wondering, is everybody, some people using parameters and some people using Franklin Lakes, and then last night Tony was on. He made two transmissions on the net, and I couldn't hear him at all. But yet, if I went on the input, I finally heard him. But I finally had to dial up the input into my radio to find him. And it does sound good, but yet his output was nothing but noise. Was from the repeater. So I don't know what's going on there, and I don't know what repeater he was set up for either. So that's let's. Some kind of something going on with the repeaters too, I think, but that's something we have to keep in mind. And I think Ron and Paul, the keepers of the repeater, know pretty much all about it from what I've been told. Back to that, W2JK.
Yeah, I mean, getting used to selecting your repeaters is fine, and you're right. I think some people can't hear one or the other repeater, and we're having that implication. What probably needs to happen is that when you trip one repeater, you need to trip the other 440 transmitter.
think that would probably work better. Cross-link them that way. I think that would be kind of neat, actually, having a, because there's a 440 in Franklin Lakes. I don't think, well, I don't know if it's a, I don't think it's a 440 in Paramus, but there is, there was in Hackensack. I think there still is. But anyway, it'd be best if you tripped one repeater in one community and got the other, you know, the complementary UHF in the other. As a kind of a safeguard to solve that problem. But anyway, having said all that, looking at your location, Don, you again have a little bit of a knob to your west, and it would not surprise me for you to hear Paramus just fine, and even though you're further north, be a little shielded, and should there be any kind of anomaly in Franklin Lakes, that they have a problem. It would not surprise me. But again, I'm not sure any more than you are which repeater Tony was using. K2AMI, are you still there? W2TTT K2BAR.
K2AMI, and I did announce a couple times that I was using the Franklin Lakes repeater TL-162.2. I heard some of your conversations here, and I find that the Franklin Lakes repeater is not putting out full power. And the word was mentioned, although I don't know who mentioned it, that that repeater might only be working on its driver and not on its final output. And those are unofficial comments that I heard. And, of course, the only real information would come from Paul W2IP. But quite cleverly using input frequencies, 7.9 repeater frequencies, PLs, and 7.9 repeater frequencies with 162.2, it might take a little bit of radio operating, guys, not appliance operating, radio operating, to figure out how to work a net. That's my comment.
I agree. I mean, there's really no, I mean, I even suggested to Bob that he put in his frequency plan two different 7.9 repeaters, one with one PL, one with the other, and make those two channel assignments in his receives assignment. And I mentioned it to Ron as well, and Ron, I think Ron was going to cry when I mentioned it. He didn't think that was a good idea. I think it's a great idea. But, again, I'd had to spin PLs, from the VFO and set up all my radios. Having said that, people aren't hearing Franklin Lakes. Part of the topography, part of the foliage, and now, Tony, you've confirmed that it's also potentially power output for Franklin Lakes. It's also aggravating this. If people can't hear it, and that's all they're doing, they're saying they don't hear it, then, that's a problem. When both repeaters are running at their normal output, it doesn't matter which repeater, within the primary coverage area, it really doesn't matter which repeater people use to access, because they'll hear either one. But if one repeater's exciter is low, that's not going to be the case, and that's what's afflicting Don, that's what's afflicting Noel. Anybody else have comments, please call K2BAR.
2JK.
Don, go.
A week before this, there was a problem, and we thought there was a power failure up that neck of the woods, because I made a comparison with the 1070 machine, and 1070 machine came up at this full scale on my S meter here, and the Franklin Lakes was just hardly moved, maybe one dot, on the bunch of dots in this so-called meter. Later on, next day, apparently the power failure had come, was cleared. Tried the Franklin Lakes machine, and it came up with a full-scale reading. So I don't know what's going on with it. I can test it right now, but that's something we have to see what's actually happening there. But I do know that I can get full-scale readings from that both 1070 and the Franklin Lakes 7.9 machine where I'm located. So it's not, I don't think it's a topography case with me. I made it out to Woodsboro, Pennsylvania, so this week, believe it or not, K3YTL, and I have the card to prove it. Back to that, W2JK.
I'm not disputing that. I'm just saying that if they're running low power and you have all these other local features and foliage, that's going to be a problem. I think the confluence of those three things is aggravating the problem for you and Noel in particular because of your topography. They can't run QRP and overcome the topography. And near field is different than far field, so. All good. Very good. Not a problem. Anybody else with comments? WTJC, I got you. Who was the other station?
Alpha Juliet 4 Whiskey Delta.
JC first, then Rachel. Jim first, then Rachel.
Yeah, I just wanted to say I can confirm from last night. I wasn't sure at the time which repeater they were using, but I could hardly hear most of the stations in the net, and yet if I switched to the input, I heard them fine. So I was listening on the input most of the net last night because of that, or?
For sure, yeah. Well, the other approach is we go back to one transmitter and we have loading receivers, or, you know, switchable transmitters and loading receivers, you know, in a matrix. That's the other approach you could do. But so go ahead.
One of the other things that people have to understand is the difference between tone and continuous tone, where if you're using a Franklin Lakes repeater, some HTs and some mobile units, you don't have the ability to split frequency, tone frequency, that is, for receive versus transmit. So you need to be in tone mode so you can put out the appropriate tone to key the Franklin Lakes repeater, but then you have open receive so that you can hear the response, because the response is coming back with the parameter tone. So, you know, there's a split tone on the Franklin Lakes repeater.
Let me clarify that a little bit. That's a good point. What Rachel is pointing out is some radios have tone encode, some have tone encode and decode. They call that tone, or DTM, or was it CDCSS. But those two frequencies can't be different. I know of a repeater that uses a different input frequency tone than output, in addition to Franklin Lakes, which does that. It requires a 162 to trip, and I think on the output does 141. But if your radio can't encode 162 and also decode 141, that you just need to enable tone encoding, not CTCSS, not carrier, continuous tone, carrier squelch, what the S stand for, but anyway. Bottom line is, you have to put it on tone encode only and basically operate carrier squelch if you're operating Franklin Lakes. Some radios can split those, the THF6 can split them. I know my DR135 can split them. I know all my ICOM mobile rigs and my one ICOM HD can. So, you know, but I know a lot of radios that can't, some of the older radios in particular. And, I think if you're careful, even the Washons and the TYTs split the frequencies too if you want. But the easiest way to do it is to tone encoding on 162 and then carrier squelch on the output. You're done with it. Any other questions? I think we beat this one to death. Good. I'm glad everybody set that up. There are any closing remarks?
No, I just got the calculator here trying to solve the formula for inverse square to answer my own question. And my head has a little bit of difficulty with the math. Back to that, then, to OEM.
I don't suppose you want a conversation about milliwatts per meter squared, huh? Okay. Power density. All right. Anyway. What else? I think there was somebody else with a comment. I forgot who it was. Was it Jim or was it... Oh, gosh. Now I'm embarrassed. I held the other comment in my head and
KC.
So I didn't forget. I wasn't sure, but I didn't forget. Go ahead, James. WTJC, K2BAR.
K2BAR from WTJC. First, number one, I just want to mention to you that I acquired remote mic speaker thing and cigarette lighter charger thing from IHT in preparation for the 14th. So I'm volunteering. Also, I haven't heard any comments about your Floodwood trip. I wondered if there was any technical observations you had from that. Howard?
Okay. I got a phone call during your first part. So, before I answer the Floodwood question, what was the first part again? I'm sorry, I feel like a total heel.
That's okay. You sound like one, too, so... Just kidding, of course. In the comment that I had acquired a remote speaker mic and the cigarette lighter charger adapter thing for my HT in preparation for the 14th. So if you didn't have me on the list, I would volunteer it. Over.
That's excellent. Excellent. Yes, yes, yes. And you'll have a mobile antenna, I hope, to plug that into. Yeah, 5 watts will be okay for most of what we're trying to do. They'll be fine. I'll just have to make sure you're on the inner loop, not the outer loop on SAGs and stuff like that. That's great. Super, Jim. That's super. All right, Floodwood. Let me explain what that is. All right, so I took a bunch of scouts up to the Adirondacks near the Canadian border. When I say near the Canadian border, I mean like within 15 miles of the Canadian border. We were up in Malone, New York. We were down in Fish Creek camping. We went to Paul Smith College to do some trail maintenance and service work and tree planting. We played ham radio. We cooked. We worked on Eagle Project workbooks. It was a pretty senior group. One kid was waiting for his Eagle board. One kid is an Eagle Scout. The other two were working on preparing their Eagle Project workbooks. So, in fact, one of them is KC2NZ D's oldest son. Unfortunately, he's deceased, and but he got his call right with my son John, KC2NZC. In any case, his Eagle board is Friday, which is pretty exciting. And let's see. Oh, so we're up there. We did operate 40 meters a lot with an Invis antenna. I also operated with one of those 6-to-1, 30-odd-foot, 31-foot wire antennas. I found that to be better on 20 than it was on 40, but it did resonate on 40 as well. But it didn't hear as well as the Invis antenna, even out overseas. So, but that was interesting. And let's see, what else? I had a little, something disconcerting happen. After the bike rally, the bike ride, Bergen County bike ride, and also the, I guess the Barry Ham Fest was the same weekend. I'm trying to remember. No, it was the Barry Ham Fest. It was something else. I forget what it was now. But anyway, I somehow misplaced the microphone to my IC7000. So if you saw my plaintiff plea on various email lists, I ended up having to buy a new one. So if my old one shows up, I wouldn't mind that. I could always use a spare. But only by chance did I have with me a headset. I almost didn't bring it, but I brought a headset with an adapter for the IC7000. Had I not brought that, I would not have had a microphone for the IC7000. It would have been PSK31, which I also did, by the way, and CW, which I did as well. So it was very good. We ran off of a battery, and occasionally I used a generator, but just to charge up the battery for a couple hours each morning. But it was great. It was a lot of fun, and I got to use a lot of local repeaters and some of the not-so-local repeaters that, because of the high mountains, you can get to. So that was kind of cool, too. Accessing, I mean, we were 50 miles, we were probably the best part of 80 miles from the Northway, or 80 miles from the, west of the Hudson River, and west of Lake Placid, west of Saranac Lake, and in some cases, well, north, like an hour or so north of Saranac Lake, and, you know, up in, I say, Malone, New York. Look up Malone, New York, you'll see how close it was to the Canadian border, Paul Smith College, and such. So that was what we were doing. We had a great time.
Sounds great. Thanks for the report.
I should also point out, on that trip, I had KC2VBR, KC2VBS, was Jeremy. I had, as I said, my friend, my deceased friend's oldest son, was a ham, and the other 18-year-old who was with us, his twin brother's a ham, and he's working on getting his ticket himself. So, yeah, KC2SQQ's brother was there, but KC2SQQ, his twin, could not be there because of a work commitment. But anyway, so we had a high-level tolerance of ham radio on this trip, to say the least. That's good. The other thing we did was we set up through the week, especially after the TechNet, we got really good at setting up a Wi-Fi hotspot. Unfortunately, after Thursday night, it was actually much better with the cell carrier and everything. So we learned a few things, using Echolink from my computer through my cell data card actually worked better than using the hotspot that was buried in my phone or the 3G network data capability was built into my phone, which is what I was using with the inboard Echolink on that. So it's just a matter of, you know, like anything else, it's antenna and gain and what you can do with it. And I just had a better ability to generate a better antenna pattern with my external hotspot than I did with the 3G network built into the phone. All right. Any other comments, questions, or announcements for the net, please call K2BAR. Somebody's really, really weak. Try it again. All right. Hope someone takes the net next week. I'd appreciate if someone would and send Bob Javits to Rossi. And Jim, thank you for taking notes tonight. The bike ride is August 14th. And Camp Car Reservation, it's an all-day affair. We'll have a great time. You'll be fed like a pig. That's the thing that you will find very carefully. Come equipped with your go bag and you'll be good to go. Have a great time. And on the 13th, we'll have Hamfest in Bergenfield with test session and breakfast is included. And if anybody wants to upgrade, feel free to let us know. Also, no advance registration is required, but it's always helpful to know that. And, of course, on the 20th, Raffle Mountain's doing there and the Hamfest as well. Anyway, I want to thank everybody. I'll give one more go-around for questions before we could be secure. If anybody have any more questions or comments, please call K2BAR. Alrighty. Well, thank you, everybody. It's been fun. It's always a great net, and you guys are what make it great. So thank you again for your kindness and participation. And, by the way, KC2VBS is in Sweden right now at the World Boy Scout Jamboree, or the World Scout Jamboree, which is kind of cool. So I'm hoping to get some reports back from him and some pictures soon. I know they had that thing shipped earlier tonight. 7-3 and have a good one. This is K2BAR, W2TTT, and with a little luck, by the way, I will check into the net from Camp Terrell next week. I should be able to. I usually can. This is K2BAR, W2TTT, off.